Hello and welcome. Come with me to a gray January morning when the coffee felt like instructional strategy. I'm walking down a school hallway when Maya, a veteran 11th grade U.S. history teacher, flags me down. Tote bag on one shoulder, a stack of dog-eared paperbacks on the other. "We're doing the Gilded Age," she says, "and if I have to listen to my students fake read one more textbook chapter, I'm enrolling myself in Woodshop." Then she asks the question that started everything. We say we teach with the best American history books, but best by what standard? That's the moment the project began. Mid-year, mid-lesson, mid-exasperation. We thought we were covered. River County Schools had a core text, decent AP alignment, and a library list with a few best of stickers from 2013. But students weren't buying it. The old model, survey course plus document packet, was buckling under polarized news cycles, shrinking attention, and a simple truth. Stories, not surveys, stick. The research backs it up. When students see themselves in what they read, motivation jumps. That's not a footnote. That's a flashing neon sign. Maya wanted narrative that doesn't lie. Books students choose to keep reading because the story won't let them go. I said, let's build a list that earns the word best. First, we had to define it. We built a working group, teachers, a librarian, a social studies coordinator, and two high school students who could smell condescension a mile away. The first meeting felt like a book club that wandered into a procurement committee. But once we wrote a rubric, everything sharpened. Alignment was non-negotiable. C3 framework inquiry arc. Common core literacy for history and social studies. Those RH and WHST standards in grades 11 to 12. If a book can't connect to what we're obligated to teach, it's an educational dead end, no matter how moving it is. Accuracy and authority mattered. We wanted current scholarship, credible sourcing, rigorous fact-checking, and transparency about historiography. Pulitzers and Bancrofts are nice, but the real test is whether a book stands up to scrutiny, not just our biases. Perspective was essential. We looked for multi-perspectivity that didn't feel tacked on. Indigenous histories, Black history, immigrant narratives, labor, gender, American history as it unfolded, messy and many-voiced. If it reads like one clean line, it's probably leaving people out. We weighed rigor and readability. Yes, we checked Lexile bands, but we also looked at qualitative complexity, structure, language, background knowledge demands. We wanted challenging, not punishing. Students who wrestle with complex texts make gains across subjects. Accessibility was a must. Universal Design for Learning, multiple formats, Sora and Overdrive audiobook access, large print, EPUB, Spanish editions. Lower every barrier. When students have options to access content, engagement jumps. Then practicality. Cost per student under $4 by pooling Title I and local funds. Vendor availability through the usual suspects. Delivery times and resilience against challenges. We read guidance from the National Coalition Against Censorship and the ALA, so we'd be ready when someone asked, why this topic, this scene, this perspective? Finally, inquiry leverage. Could a book anchor a robust investigation tied to our standards? Not just something to read, but something that provokes questions and drives a unit. If it didn't spark curiosity, it didn't make the cut. Carlos, our librarian, summed it up. Best isn't an award sticker. Best is what works for this community by design. Insider secret, the hardest books aren't the ones with the highest Lexiles. They're the ones that challenge what students think they already know about America. By March, we had a shortlist for 8th and 11th grades, with plenty of choice built in. Every selection had to pass what we called the Maya test. Would a student keep reading after the assignment was over? Jill Lepore's These Truths, Select Chapters, helped frame the long arc of United States, while provoking historiographical questions. She ties political, social, and cultural threads into a coherent tapestry. Her treatment of the Constitution links the document's original debates to the ones we're still having. Students hear the echoes. James McPherson's Battle Cry of Freedom, again, chapters, gave us a Civil War lens unmatched for narrative drive and detail. It turns a litany of battles into a story of a nation fighting for its soul. Soldier accounts pull students in, so the big themes don't float above the ground. The war becomes human and real. Isabel Wilkerson's The Warmth of Other Suns, in excerpts, took the Great Migration off the chart and into lived experience. We watch students hold their breath reading Ida May's story. Wilkerson weaves individual choices with structural pressures. So the question stops being, why did people move? And starts being, how else could they survive and seek dignity? Richard Rothstein's The Color of Law, chapters, brought zoning, redlining, and policy into focus. It sparked intense, necessary debate as students connected past decisions to present neighborhoods. The power was in the documentation, court cases, policy papers, the plain language of records. It's hard to brush off what's been written into law. Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz's An Indigenous People's History of the United States offered a critical recentering. It doesn't just add Indigenous perspectives at the margins, it reorients the story so students confront American history from an Indigenous vantage point. It's not about guilt, it's about completeness. Did every student love every selection? Of course not, but the Maya test held. We saw kids reading after homework time, arguing about zoning and justice, mapping family histories onto migration narratives, and asking harder questions about the Constitution than any worksheet could prompt. To make it work, we anchored units with inquiry that mattered. Who is included in We the People? And how has that changed over time? How do policies shape places and opportunity? What compels someone to leave home? And what do they carry with them? Books became launch pads, not finish lines. We handled logistics with equal care. Title I dollars met local funds to keep the price per student down. We checked Sora for audio. We hunted for Spanish editions so families could read alongside their kids. We tightened our rationale documents, standards alignment, objective criteria, multiple perspectives. So when challenges came, we responded with clarity, not defensiveness. What changed? Fewer abandoned books, richer discussions, exit tickets with quotes and claims, not just summaries. Students referenced evidence unprompted. The quiet kid raised a hand to ask how a redlined map from the 1930s connects to bus routes today. Across classes, we heard the same line. I didn't think I liked history, but this felt like a story I wanted to keep reading. If you're wondering how to define best for your setting, here's a simple playbook. Start with the hallway question. Best for whom? And by what standard? Form a small working group that includes students. Write your rubric before you write your list. Pilot chapters before buying in bulk. Plans for access up front. Audio, large print, translations. Tie every pick to an inquiry question that matters. Prepare rationale documents to meet challenges with evidence, not heat. Remember Carlos's wisdom. Best isn't a sticker. It's a design choice. Here's the punchline Maya and I learned. The greatest engine for rigor is narrative pull. The text that makes a student forget they're reading for school opens the door to deeper thinking, stronger evidence use, and better writing. The books on our table weren't magic. They were mirrors and windows, and also invitations. Come see how this country was made, not as a tidy list of facts, but as a complicated, contested, often beautiful, often brutal story we're still writing. If you take anything from this, let it be this. The best American history books aren't defined by prizes or page counts. They're defined by the questions they unleash, the empathy they cultivate, and the way they help students see themselves, not as spectators to the past, but as authors of what comes next. And if a veteran teacher eyes a stack of dog-eared paperbacks and decides against Woodshop for one more year, that's a pretty good sign we're on the right track. Thanks for listening. And here's to building lists that earn the word best. One community, one classroom, one unforgettable story at a time.